Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
All right, welcome into the Playbook. It's Tuesday, and it's bye week. Wow. So, I mean, we got, from yesterday, 14 days till we play again.
Bye week got here really quick, too.
Yeah, you know, I think the Patriots have been fortunate. I think they've been very fortunate to get the bye week usually right around the midway point in the season. And here it is after week 9. You've got 7 games left to play, and now you've got a week off. But when you go back into the preseason, and you count the practices that they had, the scrimmages that they had from the preseason, from the summer camp time, then you're talking at minimum 15 weeks.
Yeah, it feels like we just started and we're well beyond the halfway point.
Well, that's because I think the season does, once you get going, it does move rather rapidly.
And you get in a rhythm, too.
Yeah, you get
in
a rhythm.
You get in a routine.
And
the bye week upsets all of our routines,
yeah.
But it sure is good for the players to heal up.
Yeah, there's no question that our routine is going to be interrupted for the next couple of weeks because not only is there no game this week with the bye week, but then you don't play again until the very last game of the next week when you have Monday Night Football. So the Patriots probably have, at least from a health perspective, they probably have as good a situation as any team can hope for when they hit their bye week. Number one, again, it's close to the actual midway point in the season. And number two, they've got 2 weeks off because they're playing the last game of the next week when they're eligible to play again. Not like a Thursday game or anything. They're going to play the Monday night game when they will next play at Carolina. So we've got some time to sort of relax, reflect. We're going to do a lot of that this week. We're also going to have some fun this week. Tomorrow, I thought that we would try maybe to do this today, but then, quite frankly, I didn't want to do it because I wanted to try to space out the good stuff, number one. And number two, I did want to, you know, continue with what we normally do on Tuesdays, and that is, of course, nitpick. And it's kind of hard. Let's just put it this way. It's kind of hard to nitpick a 55-point performance. I think that, you know, as Andy suggested, you know, a couple of moments ago, that we might be able to nitpick a bit on the defensive side of the ball, and I think that's probably appropriate. But it's clear to me that this team, now that it's getting back a couple of its weapons, that these weapons are getting healthier, that this team is not far away from getting back into some kind of stride on offense. If you're able to bring back Shane Vereen, which I think most people expect will occur after this week in time for the Carolina game, that's just another piece of the puzzle, that this offense will have opposing defenses forced to deal with. And if Tom's hand continues to heal, shoulder continues to heal, continues to bring some aggressiveness, the rookies or the Wookiee receivers continue to hold on to the football, then quite frankly, signs are pointing up to this offense beginning to round out into some shape. Defensively is another story. We'll definitely spend some time with that. Tomorrow's show, I'll go ahead and give you a little bit of a sneak preview, but tomorrow's show, for those of you that will be with us, and I hope that you will stick with us through the bye week because we do have some things we're going to talk about. We definitely have some significant things I think we're going to talk about today, but just to kind of give you a lay of the land. Tomorrow, the next show, we're going to issue midseason grades. Now, I realize we're a little bit past the midway point in the season, but since as I said, the Patriots always seem to have their bye week right around the midpoint of the season. We'll wait for bye week. We'll wait for the midway point of the season, just a little past it. And I want you to be thinking about where you will grade, you know, several facets of this football team. So we'll talk more about midseason performance and grade and how these guys stack up to the rest of the NFL on Wednesday's show. Thursday's show this week is going to be the doozy. It'll be game show Thursday right here on Patriots Playbook. And we'll play some radio game show style games. We'll compete against each other. We'll have caller against caller. Would really love to see Big Al and John in South Carolina do battle. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but I'm you know, if you're both listening today, I hope that you'll make an appointment listening for 2 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. And we'll be giving away fabulous prizes to our winners on Thursday as well. So game show Thursday will come up on Thursday. And then, of course, we'll get into the Carolina Week stuff the following week. Today's program, in addition to nitpicks, I do want to deal with some issues concerning NFL news. And I know that PFW's talked a little about it. You've probably heard it talked about on your own local radio shows as well, no matter where you may be. But the entire story surrounding Richie Incognito and the surroundings and the atmosphere of the Miami Dolphins right now. And we spent some time talking about this. And as you know, we always spend a little bit of extra time every week on Thursdays with our pro football guru, Russell Baxter, talking about divisional opponents because you see these teams twice a year. They're the only teams that you do see twice a year. You got a home and home with these guys. And so while the Patriots have already played Miami once and beaten them by 10 points, you have to wonder, who's really running the asylum in Miami? You know, Miami coach Joe Philbin was sort of, I think, guilted. And frankly, I'm not sure that there's any other way to look at it. He was sort of guilted into appearing before the media yesterday after the team suspended Incognito for his harassment, and that's probably putting it mildly, of Jonathan Martin. Philbin took the blame for the environment in which Martin was forced to work, in which the players were forced to exist. Martin left the team after a lunchroom incident, if you will. I think it's too little too late. If you're a head coach, and this is just my opinion, but everything that I'm giving you here, I'd love for you to counter. If you can, I'd love for you to share your thoughts with as well here today on the program. But I think Joe Philbin's kind of a day late and a dollar short, and I'll tell you why. Because in this day and age, when success is expected at the high levels, and in particular in the pro ranks, but anywhere where there's big money to be surrounded, you are a CEO of a major company and corporation. And if you don't know what's going on, at least somewhat, at every level of your organization, you are doomed to fail. Now, if you are the president of a company listening in, or you run a business, or maybe you run a mom-and-pop shop, or if you're like me, you are a sole proprietor of your own industry, let's say, you know that you've got to know a little bit of everything that's going on in order to be able to be successful. And so head coaches who stick their head in the sand or who put their blinders on and only worry about breaking down film or only worried about this or only worried about that, and they're not worried about what's going on in the locker room or what's going on in the field or what players are saying or doing to each other, if you don't know what's going on at every level of your organization, you are being undermined at the very core of what it's all about. Now, there's a very fine difference, in my opinion, very fine line that you have to walk between knowing what's going on and being a micromanager. No one's saying that a head coach or a CEO needs to be a micromanager. In fact, I think we all, no matter where we work, we all hate that. If our bosses are constantly looking over our shoulders, breathing down our necks, telling us what to do, what not to do, how about a little space here and let me do the job that you hired me to do? And I think we can all agree that that's something we all hope that we get and that we have to put up with varying degrees of micromanagement no matter what level we work at. But I would argue because the stakes are so high and the money's so great and the rate of return expected is tremendous that unless a head coach operates as a CEO and operates as a bit of a micromanager, that the head coach is going to be in some trouble. You got to know what's going on with your staff. You got to know what's going on with your players. You have, you know, a company of 53 players and probably anywhere from 8 to 10 to a dozen more coaches that you must rule over. And then if you're not all pushing in the same direction, you're not going to have success. Now, if you're happy to be the president or the CEO of a major company, then you've got hundreds or even thousands of employees – Well, you've got layers that you have to report to. In other words, you probably know what's going on in your management team, but then your management team has to know what's going on in the level below them and the level below them and the level below them. So it's a sort of a chain of command. Less so in the NFL does a chain of command work. Just because of the emotion, because of the intensity, because of the locker room atmosphere, because of the testosterone that runs rampant through locker rooms. Look, if you've ever been inside a locker room yourself, especially a football locker room, you know that it can get charged in there. You know that it can be at times distasteful, and that's probably a mild way to put it. You know that hazing goes on. By the way, we're going to share some hazing stories with you here today. And if you've got a hazing story that, you know, you've been a part of, love to hear from you. We'll try to keep it as clean as you possibly can. But again, if you've played sports, you've been around sports as long as I have, and I've been in locker rooms and covering locker rooms and trying to play within the locker room environment, you know, ever since I was a teenager. And so that's, well, I mean, we're talking 40 years out of my life that I've been in and around them. And some of them are certainly better than others. But you also know that there's a certain amount of tolerance of what goes on in this locker room. Now, is that the right thing to do? Probably not, because I realize that in this day and age, we're all extremely politically correct, sometimes ad nauseum. I mean, sometimes I wish, you know, somebody would just be un-PC just to break the ice, because I think sometimes we go overboard with the whole political correctness. I mean, get a grip, folks. Get a grip. It's sports. You know, it has very little to do with, I'm offended. Now, there is a line that you can walk that borders on offensiveness and rudeness and inappropriate behavior with you know, locker room kidding. And I think what Richie Incognito, if the reports of what he said, did, tweeted out to Jonathan Martin are accurate, then I think he's clearly stepped over that line. I'll tell you what I would like, though, and I'm not sure that this has been done yet, and hopefully it will be, but I'd really love for, you know, Martin's people who have released all of the transcripts, I'd love for them to release an actual audio recording of the voicemail that Incognito left for Martin, because I frankly believe that now we need a little perspective on what was actually said. In other words, sometimes by someone's tone of voice, you can kind of guess whether or not maybe any of it was done tongue in cheek, or maybe any of it was just kidding that had gone overboard. See, to me, while Richie Incognito has a track record of being a bad dude, I mean, all you have to do is go back to his time at Nebraska, and then you go to his time with the St. Louis Rams after he was selected by the Rams, and then he was picked up, you know, by Miami, because I think they picked him up largely because, well, they needed help, and they thought that maybe they could sort of rein in some of the behavior issues that he had shown. I mean, hey, didn't the Patriots do kind of the very same thing with Aaron Hernandez? I think that he doesn't know, and it's pretty clear to see in his track record, that he doesn't know when to turn it off. Football being such an emotional game, being so testosterone-filled, where sometimes guys have a difficult time not only turning it on, but also turning it off again. It spills over into the locker room. It spills over into your everyday life. I mean, you hear, you know, stories of players who go into emotional rages, and not necessarily steroid-filled rages, which certainly have happened as byproducts of taking steroids in the past. But guys just somehow they have a hard time coming off of the emotion and coming down from the emotion that a high-octane, violent, fast, physical game will bring. And Incognito just didn't know how to turn it off, didn't know how to dial it down. And then when you combine that with the regular atmosphere in a locker room over, you know, kidding, hazing, you know, rookie beatdowns, whatever it may be, you know, tradition, if you will, and I use that word loosely because I think there's a difference certainly between tradition and hazing, then it just went overboard. And here's a guy that could have stood up and said, you know what? Okay, that's enough. Or anybody else on that Miami team could have stood up and said, you know what? That's enough. Or better yet, Joe Philbin could have stood up and said, hey, guess what? That's enough. Cut it out. But he didn't. He could have even had his assistant coaches, who, you know, they do kind of eat in the same lunchroom a lot of times with these same players, and could have seen this was going on. They could have said something or could have done something, but guess what? They didn't do it. Why? They looked the other way. Why? Because it's part of locker room culture. It's part of the culture. So everybody looks the other way. Oh, boys will be boys. When you realize that, you know, actually, this might be hurtful, and actually, maybe this is going to get out of control. And maybe when you put all these guys together in an emotionally charged situation, combined with the testosterone, is going to get out of hand. Now, I've heard two sides of the story. I've heard one side of the story, certainly, as most of us have seen and heard over the last couple of days, that Incognito is a bad dude. And if we are to believe what we have already read, seen, heard in the media over the last, 48 hours or so since this whole story really kind of came bellowing forth, then you'd have to agree that, okay, here's a guy that really doesn't have any excuses. There's a reason that he was suspended by the Dolphins. And you'd have to say that, you know what? It might be difficult. Might be difficult for him to come back ever to play for Miami. In fact, I'll go a step further. It might be difficult to have him play on a football team again, period, because of what he did.
And hopefully we'll have our guy Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald tomorrow. We can dive into this a little deeper because he's been inside this whole story.
Well, he's the one that kind
especially
of,
especially on Twitter.
He's kind of snapped to it. That's true. And of course,
yeah,
we visited
him. He's been
breaking
a lot of stuff down.
He's been breaking a lot of this stuff. And of course, we had him on a couple of weeks ago before we played the Dolphins here. And of course, as you would imagine, Armando's been swamped with requests.
And I know we're getting emails.
And he's trying to follow the story.
Yeah, we're getting emails. And you're getting some fan reaction here, John, talking on this topic. And certainly it's a good bye week topic. And he will be, I believe, texting me tonight or tomorrow morning. And hopefully we can have him on between 2 and 4 tomorrow.
Good. And we'll get the latest and we'll get some perspective from him because he's the one in on it. The other side of the story, before we get to taking your cards, letters, and phone calls here, kids, the other side of the story here is Jonathan Martin. Now, since he disappeared last week, nobody's heard from him, not even the team. And so pretty soon they'll have to make a decision on whether or not they're going to suspend him for the rest of the year or what are they going to do with Jonathan Martin. If he's the guilty party, how is he going to respond to this? Can he even come back? And that's what we don't know yet. But there are those, and this is the side of the story that has come out a little bit more today in case you were unaware. There are those that feel like Jonathan Martin was soft. Now, I'm not sure where to take that term. I think the term soft in football means a bit of a pushover, maybe a bit of a, I'm going to mix two metaphors here, so take it for what it's worth, a bit of a wuss. You know what I'm saying? That's probably pretty, probably pretty self-explanatory. I'm not blaming him at all, okay? Because what Incognito did is inexcusable. What I'm saying here, though, is that this is the perception based on several who are in the know inside that Miami locker room that said about Jonathan Martin. Now, here's a guy that just was not a steel-hardened, rough-and-tumble, emotional guy. That while, you know, you've heard about Richie Incognito being an a-hole, but he's a guy that you would want to take with you in a back alley or you'd want to have on your side in a bar fight because you know he would stand up and slug somebody for you and he'd probably be a tough dude to knock down. Martin is just the opposite of that. Passive, not aggressive. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. Doesn't mean he's wrong in any shape or form. But is it the kind of guy you want to go to battle with? The kind of guy you want to go to war with? And so now you got two guys on a line who are just polar opposites, and one of them's trying to pick on the other one a bit to kind of get him going, and the other one is taking great offense to it. And the problem just exacerbates itself. And, of course, Incognito overstepped his bounds when, you know, he brought race into it, and, you know, it's at the head of all of it here is the head coach who did not know what was going on. And quite frankly, I'm going to tell you this right now. It's 2:25 Eastern time on Tuesday here. On what's today? November the 5th? Is that today? Is today the 5th? Thank you. even know what the hell day it was. But at 225, 226 now Eastern time on November the 5th, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think Joe Philbin survives this. Because I'm not so sure that the Miami season is going to be able to pick itself up. I realize that the Dolphins, you know, mathematically are still very much, you know, in the thick of things because there's so much football still to be played, you know, for, you know, wild card or what have you. But I don't think he survives this because I think now this locker room becomes fractured. And I don't think that there's going, I think they're all going to have to basically shun Incognito. I can't see him coming back. I don't really even see Jonathan Martin coming back. I wonder if anyone makes the parallel to what the Patriots had to do in the offseason when the Aaron Hernandez story broke. And you know, of course, with the Patriots, they immediately cut all ties with Hernandez. The Dolphins have now cut ties with Incognito, although they have not released him. And I think I'm not sure that they will because I believe there's a monetary stipulation that goes along with his contract. They end up costing them money for the long term based on his contract. So I'm not sure they will. But I don't really see how they can invite him back into this environment because you know it's going to be a tremendous story within the story and there's going to be people who will ask him questions. I just don't know how this ever goes away now. I just don't know how it goes away. I don't think the Dolphins are as strong internally, and I think it's very clear to see that now when their coach has to backpedal because he basically was guilted into appearing in front of the media to take the blame for this whole incident beginning with in the first place. That's not an environment that can take care of a Hernandez-style story like the Patriots had to do, and oh, by the way, the Patriots had to also, you know, add Tim Tebow on top of that over the summer. Because the Patriots are strong at the top, the Dolphins are not. So not only does, I don't know how Incognito comes back, I don't know how Jonathan Martin comes back, and I don't know how Philbin survives it. And I really think, again, the Dolphins should look north toward New England to figure out how you have to handle situations like this. All right, I'd love to have your input on this. So let me give you the, you know, all the requisite contact information here. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address. Our toll-free telephone number is 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, or you can hit us up on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. And on social media, there's two ways to get a hold of us in the program. At JR Broadcaster is the Twitter handle, and I hope you'll follow us. I'm getting close to that 1900 mark, Kev. Getting close. So before too long, I'll be screaming for 2,000. I am going to come up with something for whoever gets me over the top of 2,000 Twitter followers. So anyway, please follow me on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster, and then you can hit me up on Facebook as well. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, is where you can find me. Had some new Facebook friends this week, Patriots fans, so it's great to have you aboard. I want your nitpicks, of course, this being Nitpick Tuesday, from Sunday's game, the 55-31 win over Pittsburgh. But I also love to hear what you think about what's going on with the Miami Dolphins, number one. And number two, is there still a place in pro sports, in sports at all, for any sort of hazing? Or have we arrived at the point in time in this country where political correctness has overtaken everything? Is there room anywhere, inside a locker room, inside a private organization, inside anything? Is there room, is there a place for discrimination? What happens in your own line of work if you see it happen? Do you turn and look away, or do you say something? I want to know how you feel about this, because quite frankly, I'm of the opinion that sometimes political correctness in this country, no matter the line of work of in, no matter we're talking sports or non-sports, I'm of the opinion that sometimes political correctness gets the best of all of us, and we just go too far. That doesn't mean that hazing of the kind that Richie Incognito is acceptable. It's not. But tradition does count for something in this country. Tradition, routine, those that have come before you all need to be respected. Respect, I think, is more important than, shall we say, political correctness. And I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. There is some tie there. But I want to examine that as well. Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, the telephone number. Let's lead it off with Dave in Connecticut. Dave, good afternoon. You're
hey,
in the playbook.
Mr. Rook, how you doing today?
I'm good, Dave.
Yeah, I'm listening to you, and I'm kind of giggling. You know, first, let's get into the nitpicks.
Yeah, go.
You know what? I don't have any. I mean, that was an awesome win, and if that's a sign of the offense really turning it on, it's going to be a real fun rest of the season here for us. You know, it's going to be exciting to see where this team ends up.
You don't have one nitpick, Dave? Not one? Seriously?
You know, when you scored 55 points, although the defense did give up 31, you have to say, you know, okay, they gave up 5 yards of carry on the ground, but they only gave up 105. Secondary, they gave up some, you know, some plays. But you know what? You lost Gregory, you know, Tlaib, for what I feel is a good reason. We'll rest him another couple of weeks. Didn't play. You know, so, I mean, you know, hey, you know, if you look at this game overall, I think, you know, the defense, they played well. I'm not going to say they played great, okay? You know, they played well enough to win the game, okay? So that's why I have no nitpicks. I think, you know, we get healthy coming into the with the bye, with Vereen coming back and Tlaib. You know, Gregory's out for a couple of weeks with his thumb. You know, I heard they cut Colley. But, you know, I think, you know, for the first time this year, you saw Tom Brady being Tom Brady.
Because he has healthy receivers for maybe the first time all year as well.
First time, absolutely. You know, and I mean, if that's, you know, if that's what it's going to look like with all these guys on the field, then, hey, the rest of the NFL better watch out. That's all I got to say there.
Well, let me share my first nitpick with you. And as well as the offense played overall, you are absolutely right that you really can't complain with 55 points. But I would tell you that the offensive line is still allowing Tom Brady to get hit too much.
Agreed. And
you know,
as bad as it has been.
I think you can tolerate one sack a game. I think you can tolerate two, maybe three hits a game. But four hits, two or three sacks,
right.
No, that's way too much. And the offensive line is going to allow their quarterback, by the time that this season is over, to age another 2 years.
That's true, too. They need to tighten that up a bit. I agree with that, you know, but, you know, I think that's, you know, that's something that's definitely fixable. Okay. You know, I think that they ran the ball rather well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my one nitpick would have been if Belichick took Ridley out the game. Okay. Because, and he said it himself in his press conference, you know, that fumble, I mean, even though Ridley did fumble, that was more of a defensive play on Polamalu, ripping the ball out of there.
Yeah, it was, and Belichick said as much, and frankly, I thought that was the best move of the game, was leaving Ridley in there.
I don't get me wrong, I love Blunt, and I love Bolden, and what Vereen brings to the table, but Ridley is your number one back, and he's an explosive runner, and he needs at least 20 touches a game. Yeah, I really believe that.
He does, and I don't know why. It took the coaching staff so long to realize that Ridley is the best option they have there. I don't know if it was because they were still trying to punish him for, you know, dropping the ball or whatever. But see, that stuff's kind of juvenile. I mean, that sort of plays into the whole locker room mentality that I was just talking about with the whole hazing issue. I mean, come on. You know, what's going to win you football games? And is that really going to benefit your organization in the long haul? No. The guy's a pro. He understands he's got to hold on to the football. He's still your best option at tailback. He needs to be in there, and Dave, you said it. He's got to touch it 20 times a game.
Absolutely. Now, going on to this, like, this thing in Miami, this mess.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. First of all, let me say this. This defensive lineman is a marshmallow, okay? Because all he had to do was say no. He's a grown man. You know, we're not talking like he's a 120-pound wide receiver, okay? I mean, I know, Incognito's a big boy, too. All right, worst-case scenario, what would have happened? You know, well, I don't know what Incognito, but say they got in a fight, okay? And that would have been the end of it.
Well, but hold on, Dave. You touched on a very important point, because those that are sort of kind of blaming and staying nameless, by the way. Those that are blaming Jonathan Martin for really not reacting the right way all feel like this is something. And again, this is based on what a football locker room and a football atmosphere is like for those that may not really understand it if you've never been inside the locker room. These are kind of things that usually are handled internally in organizations like this. In other words, they feel like he should have stood up and told Incognito, you know what, dude, you got a problem with me? Then let's settle it out on the field. Let's go out of the parking lot or let's go out on the field and let's just start wailing on each other because that's the way football players handle it. Now, you may think that's...
Not even that. In life, I think, you know, not that I'm going to, like, connect this to, like, spousal abuse, but, you know, when a woman is, like, you know, physically abused by a guy and then, you know, she finally says, you know, enough is enough. I don't deserve this kind of mentality. You know what I mean? Sticking up for yourself. I mean, this, you know, now... Incognito is a douchebag as far as I'm concerned because this goes way beyond hazing. And I'll even like bring up Riley Cooper when he dropped that N-word.
Yeah.
You know, I saw they put up some of the text messages. You know, I would, you know, I mean, he dropped that N-word a few times. And I mean, you know, I don't know what this guy, what planet this guy lives on. That goes way beyond hazing. All right, it's racist.
Well, that part of it did overstep the bounds of decency, and I would happen to agree with you. But you know as well as I do that that word is used quite frequently in locker rooms
between
blacks, between whites, blacks and whites. But it's always been sort of with a wink, wink, you know, that goes along with it. So,
but
that's why I'd like to hear the actual audio tape of the conversation or the text, you know, the message that was left to Martin, because sometimes you can gain a sense of context.
A little more.
Yeah, you're gonna by the tone of the voice.
The whole thing.
Right.
I was like watching the NFL Network and they had like Terrell Owens and not Terrell Owens, the running back, the TD for Denver. You know,
Terrell Davis. Yeah,
Davis. Then they had Eric Davis. You know, the ex cornerback. They have all these guys, and they went around. They did like their own little red, you know, like little round table. And, you know, they all said, yeah, when we were rookies, you know, there was a time that, you know, you might have had to pick up a bill, but it was a one time thing. And, like, they all said, and if they tried it again, you would say no. And that would be the end of it.
Basically, you know? That's what happens. And I would also go a step further. Usually, a rookie's asked to pick up a bill and the guys will kind of leave him with a large check. And it's kind of like, okay, you paid your dues because, hey, when those guys were rookies, they did the same thing. And so that's passing of, as I mentioned earlier, Dave, that's passing down of a tradition. That's not really hazing per se, because hazing also intimates some sort of physical punishment. Now, the Patriots actually do a little hazing. It's all in good nature. It's all in good fun when they shave the rookies' heads and they give them the nasty haircuts at the end of camp because, you know, oh, hey, you made the team. Well, guess what? Here you go. You're going to get shaved. And that's because the other guys have had it done to them before. Before when they were rookies. And of course, you always see rookies pick up a veteran's shoulder pads and carry him to the locker room. But once the season, right. And this is something, these are inane, silly little dumb things that are done for team camaraderie and a lot of times for team building because, hey, look, rookie, you're going to be a part of our family. You're going to be a part of our team. You got to go through what I went through. And I think even the rookies, for the most part, understand this. And most of them, in fact, rarely do you ever hear or see of an instance where they don't go along with it. And I don't know if you could say, okay, well, that's just feeding into it. But really, because it's silly. It's innocuous. It's dumb.
It's like a childish thing.
It's a childish thing, but it goes along because it helps in team building and it helps in the respect factor. Number one, because the veterans need to know that they can rely on the rookies in tough times, and the rookies need to know that, you know, the veterans will be there to help them when they're going through tough times. And what Incognito did with Martin clearly went over the line and stepped over, and he did not know when to turn it off and dial it back, because here's a guy that might have been a little soft. He might have been. I don't know the man, so I can't really say that.
Yeah.
But if he was, based on some of the things that I've read and that I've heard, then Incognito fed on that by saying, okay, I found a weakness, and here I go. And so his football mentality kicks in, and wham, then he socks him good. And then he can't back off, because now he's in full-fledged emotional throttle. And the problem just took off. And this is where the coaches and the players should have said something. Somebody needed to step in, and they didn't do it. And this is how hazing gets out of hand, no matter what you are, no matter where you are, no matter if you're in a sports team or you're in a corporation or wherever it may be, a regular business. When hazing occurs, this is how it gets out of hand.
Yeah, it can escalate. You know, like you said, though, I don't think Miami can bring either of these guys back.
No.
You know, Incognito, just because of his over the top. And like you said, yeah, you know, if I was in an alley, I would want, Incognito behind me. This kid Martin, you know, I don't know. I mean, just by that one action.
Well, but do you really need him in an alley with you? First of all, any right-minded person isn't going to get into an alley in the first place. You're not going to put yourself in that position. So the question's really kind of silly to begin with. I don't blame Jonathan Martin. I don't blame him at all. He's blameless as far as I'm concerned. But I understand, doesn't mean I agree with it, but I understand why some on the inside would say, well, he should have kept this inside the family so we could have dealt with it here without the free world coming in and now nosing in our business. I understand that. I get that because I've been in locker rooms for 40-plus years.
Yeah, and you've seen it.
Yes, and that's how you take care of it as a family. You take care of it internally, just like if you have a problem, say, between, you know, your crazy old uncle and, you know, and a grandfather, okay? And the crazy old uncle's, you know, an alcoholic or whatever in your family, and it's causing some discomfort, you know, or what
Maybe
have you.
I just
you,
to get drunk.
Thank you, Eddie Mac. Let's say you're taking care of your own business, and you don't want to broadcast your family's business to the rest of the world, because it's your business, it's personal, it's private. And that's the way a lot of these Dolphins players are feeling now, and that's also the way that a lot of these Patriot players felt over the summer when this whole Hernandez story took place.
Mess, yeah.
Absolutely.
The only thing, I mean, not to be like heartless with Martin, I think, listen, like I said, you know, started this, he should have stood up for himself. I mean, you know, listen, you're a grown man. This isn't like, you know, he's a little kid and here's this big bully, you know, coming on the playground saying, give me your lunch, okay? You're a grown man. You know, all you had to say, and who knows? If he told Incognito, you know, go F yourself, I'm not paying no 1500 or 15 grand so you can go to Vegas. What are you going to do about it? Yeah, you know, he'd probably been like, all right, rookie. You know, and if not, if it escalated, so what? It escalated. You know, but he didn't stand up for himself.
Yeah, right.
You know, and like you said, you know, that's where bullying is. But they look to find the weakest and the most insecure, and they know they can, you know, inflict their will on that person. That's what the definition of a bully is.
Sure.
Okay. And the only thing that, you know, I'm saying about this guy is that, you know, I don't know if he went to the coaching staff or he went to other teammates, but he didn't stand up. It doesn't seem like he stood up for himself.
No, he didn't, and I think that's part of the problem that a lot of the Dolphins players clearly have with a guy like Martin. Dave, thank you very much for the phone call. I appreciate it. Let's get Andrew in Buffalo in here. Andrew, good afternoon. You're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Andrew.
That's good. Yeah, it was a crazy game. Very excited. But if I had one nitpick, it'd probably be Kyle Arrington. He is still getting beat, man. It's crazy. I don't get it. Like, he really needs some safety help. I'm just wondering, like, you know, seeing that matchup, you know, Ben Roethlisberger started to favor that matchup, and I'm just wondering, why can't the safety recognize that and just help him over there? Like, you know, don't show it, but just at least disguise it, but get over there quickly. He was getting tortured. It's not the first time we've seen it. It's been going on pretty much week to week from, like, week two, week three.
Yeah.
He's doing pretty well in the beginning of the season. And now it's just an ongoing thing. I think that groin injury does play a part, too. He's dealing with some kind of injury. I think it's a groin injury.
Who is? Wait a second. Who is?
Kyle Arrington. I think he got a groin injury, right?
Do you have a groin injury, Kevin? I know that he had, it was something a couple of weeks ago, but I think he's about as healthy as he could possibly be. I don't know that there was anything, wrong with him before this last week's game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. His coverage ability is really bad. I don't know.
Well, Andrew, I think part of that is because he had such a good start to the year because he was the nickelback. He was the nickel corner. Whenever they were in plus coverage, then he was going to be the guy that came in. And then when he was thrust into, regular base defense situation, and he was the number one guy, he's not Aqib Talib. So he's going to pale by comparison. His, where he comes into play is when he comes over with help over the top, not when he's the primary guy.
He entered Sunday's game as questionable with a groin.
It was a groin. Okay, thank you for that. You're right on, Andrew.
Thank you. Like you said, he's really good with the safety. I just feel like the safety didn't really bail him out. You see him getting over there late. Denner kind of struggled a little bit, too. I've seen him give up a few catches. But other than that, I think they played really well. I mean, they did give up, 400 yards of total offense?
They did, and that would be – that's nitpick number two for me, after number one being the O-line still allowing Brady to be sacked. Nitpick number two for me is just you're giving up way too much defensively. And, again, I agree, and I know that there's too much that's gone from that defense to where it's probably going to be like this for the rest of the year. I still want to see how Isaac Sopawaga is actually – integrated into the mix, and I thought for a first game, I thought he did pretty doggone well. And in fact, I know our boy Escal did a nice film review on here on the website that you might want to take a look at, because he certainly figured into it prominently. But at the same time, you allowed a lousy offense, and Pittsburgh did have a lousy offense, still a very good quarterback, I think, as we saw, who's still prone to mistakes, but you allowed this lousy offense to go for four Bills and 31 points, and you're not going to win any championships by that, because you're not going to score, 32 to 35 points every game. You're just not going to.
Exactly. And I got another thing, too. That fourth down call, I don't think they should have went for it. I think it was in the first quarter, and I just kept saying, take the point. And he just continues to go for it on fourth down, Bill Belichick. I think you got to take them points, because that could have been a turning point. I don't know. I don't agree with that.
Again, I think you can take all of those on individual situations. You have to try to – this is where a head coach has to be – this is where he's got to know his team. And as much as we were slamming a guy like Joe Philbin a short while ago, you have to feel the momentum. You have to know what the play, could be. You have to know the situation. You have to see the defense that's on the field, and you just have to have – sometimes you have to play with your gut. He clearly did at that time, and he got right.
You're right. And last year I didn't mind, but this year, because of the kind of problems we got this year, I don't know. I think you just kind of got to ride it out and take them points. But, that thing that's going on.
Well, anybody else, Andrew, anybody else other than maybe Pittsburgh, that you might have seen a change in that thought process, because they knew they could move the football at will on that Steeler defense.
Oh, right.
Okay? So if it had been, say, Cincinnati or even Baltimore for that matter, you might not have seen that call come, because they weren't sure – how often they're going to be able to get back in that situation.
Right.
Makes sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You're right. Yeah, that thing that's going on in Miami, that is kind of crazy. You don't see things like that go on in New England, and that's why I really like them. I admire New England. But in Miami, I don't know. I think that guy should be suspended. I think he should be through. I don't think he should be able to play football anymore, to be honest. I think it was more than just, veterans and rookies kind of playing around type stuff. I think he really didn't like them. I really believe it. It's just very egregious and bad.
Yeah, it didn't really appear that he liked him too much, did it? And that's sad. But, again, those are situations, though, that probably should take care of themselves internally. But, I clearly Incognito went over the line when, he brought race into it. And then he, brought in, death threats. And, I mean, come on. Dude, you're kind of out of hand here. It's over the top. And he's shown in the past that he can't handle situations similar. It happened to him in St. Louis. He had a reputation for being a kind of a D-bag at Nebraska when he was there playing ball as well. And now it's the same thing. So, all over again.
And that's weird. I don't understand. Me and my friends, we always watch football. We never noticed this guy was making all that trouble. Never noticed it. Just all of a sudden, it just popped out of nowhere. We hear about the center.
Well, you know why, Andrew? Because he's an offensive lineman, and they toil in anonymity anyway.
Right.
You know, so if he were a star player, a skill position player, what have you, then you'd probably hear him be out there a little bit more. But here's a guy, quite frankly, if you don't know any of the background, when he was in St. Louis, when he came out of the University of Nebraska, he was a problem child ad nauseum. Just go back and Google him, or go back and look at old stories from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and you'll find out that this was a guy that was out partying, drinking, drugging, out all night. He wasn't, you know, he was a complete and totally off the hook kind of guy, to the point where the St. Louis coaches and players did not want to deal with him anymore because he could not be counted upon. And so that's why after, what was it, 4 or 5 years, they finally said goodbye. They couldn't take it anymore.
They said Tony Dungy never wanted to draft him, apparently.
Yeah. I believe that. Because some people, you know, and this is why the Patriots have passed on certain guys in the draft before, because their reputations just precede themselves, and they don't want to take a chance. But I think now you've seen the Patriots trying to take a chance on some select players because they know that the margin of error is very, very fine, and they feel like if they get them into this culture here in the New England locker room, that it can kind of wrap its arms around the individual and perhaps watch them and be more careful with them. That's what they were hoping with Aaron Hernandez, and guess what? It didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't happen.
I mean, you know, but the fact that he's still taking that, he's still like a big man bullying on someone, he's been getting bullied all season. I mean, they gave up, what, 26 sacks and X amount of games? Like, they've been getting bullied. So
yeah,
he's got a lot to think about. But yeah, one more thing, too. The defense of the New England Patriots, they play – I've seen a little bit of that 3-4, so I'm just wondering, like, Chandler Jones is playing linebacker in that 3-4 set?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't really see him going coverage.
Wait a second. Who did you say, Andrew?
Chandler Jones was playing linebacker in the 3-4 set?
He doesn't usually do that, no. Now, he might have been lined up slightly off the line of scrimmage, but that's how the Patriots usually line up their defensive ends anyway. Now, there might have been a situation where it looked like he was an actual linebacker, depending on the personnel groupings, but technically, no. Technically, no.
Okay, because I did see Nikovich go in coverage. I don't know if the ball was caught, but I seen him go in coverage. The guy kind of, like, got to the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really sure what was going on the other side, whether Chandler Jones was playing coverage or not. But pretty much, I seen him going after the quarterback. I think he did a really good job, though.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? I have to admit, I didn't really have a problem with the linebackers in their coverage. I saw even Dante Hightower, you know, on a couple of occasions, step for step with his man. So I thought, you know, I saw some actual improvement, you know, where that's concerned. I had a problem with the point of attack. And while I know that Joe Villano and Chris Jones have been unsung heroes by this whole defense, I talked to Chris Jones after the game as well, and boy, what a nice young man. I mean, honest to goodness, he leads, you know, all NFL rookies in QB sacks now. And, you know, he's undersized. I mean, hell, I'm as tall as Chris Jones, and I'm 6 foot tall. So I know they list him at 6'2 or whatever, but I mean, literally, I am as tall as he is. He has me by quite a bit in terms of, shall we say, weight and muscle. But I got to tell you, you know, there's a reason why teams now are running up the middle on the Patriots. It's because they don't have big Vince Wilfork in the middle stuffing the run. So that's why now I got a real good up-close look at why they decided they needed Sopoaga, because they need somebody to fill the gaps. And we saw some of that because Pittsburgh had not run the ball all year long. I mean, they were horrible. Now, a lot of that is because Le'Veon Bell, who's a pretty good back, I think we saw. Le'Veon Bell had been injured much of this year. And now he's now rounded back into shape. I thought he had a very good game running the football for the most part against New England on Sunday. And they took advantage of the Patriots' undersize, not inability, but undersize in the middle. And they were able to, do some damage with it. So that's something that will definitely need to be addressed before too long with the Patriots.
I mean, it's like you said, I mean, I'm not sure who said this, but it's like you can't do a lot of schemes in the run defense. Like, you just have to play big and hold your ground. You can't really scheme that sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be tough, but I hope they hang in there. But once we go against teams that really like to run the ball, I think that's where we're going to be in a little bit of trouble. We're going to have to try to manage the clock and not allow them to run the ball we have to run the ball.
That's a concern if teams want to try to play keep away. If the Patriot offense, you know, continues to, you know, start, you know, spitting out some numbers with, you know, their healthy people getting back, you're going to see more and more teams go to the run game to control the ball, control the clock, and keep the ball out of Tom Brady's hands. That's why I feel like this is the most important thing that's on the table right now for the Patriots defensively for the second half of the season. They've got to be able to make a stop on the run like they did earlier in the year.
Right. Yeah, one more thing. Yeah, just like what you said, like a couple years ago, you know, Patriots always kind of won most of their games where it was like sort of like a blowout, you know, where they was just getting away, running away with it towards the end. And I feel confident now this year because they're able to kind of like plug it out and win those very close games. I'm more confident now than I was then when it came to close games.
Yeah,
I feel like they're able to hang in there and come away with those wins. So maybe it work out fine in the playoffs if you know, once we get in.
Sure, I think that's entirely possible. Good stuff, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate the phone call. All right, so there you go. It's that easy. 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free telephone number. Ace Ticket Online, 508-298-0398. Let me share a couple of thoughts here with you. By the way, this one came from David on Twitter, who said that fumble was classic Polamalu doing what he does best, talking about stripping Ridley in the game and basically the Patriots not penalizing Ridley for the fumble. David says, we gave up too many points, but we are getting back a few guys versus the Panthers. Very true, and that is certainly going to be a step in the right direction, without a doubt. And I do believe that that will be important as you go from, you know, for Carolina and beyond because Denver comes in right after that. So that, you know, it'll be a pretty exciting time around this part as well. Michael says, great win on Sunday, hoping the bye will get more players ready. My nitpick for the week is the pass defense. Many open plays. Well, I think if you look at it in a generic sense, Michael, that's probably true. There are probably still some open plays, that you got to be concerned about. I thought that Jericho Cotchery had a pretty good game for Pittsburgh, and that is some cause for concern. I thought Emmanuel Sanders actually made a few plays for Pittsburgh, so I think you have to maybe give Sanders a little more credit where credit is due rather than say that it was the Patriots basically screwing up that allowed him to get there. I thought Cotchery was sort of undervalued, and that's part of the reason why he had some success. But I thought Sanders had a pretty doggone good game overall. I thought Heath Miller had a pretty good game overall for Pittsburgh. I didn't think Ben Roethlisberger had a great game at all. You can still see that, you know, he is, I think rattled by his offensive line being inconsistent at best and pretty bad at worst. And the Patriots, you know, came up with 5 sacks again. First time in a couple of years now that the Patriots have come up with back-to-back weeks where they've had 5 or more sacks in a game. Chandler Jones is asserting himself. We're getting, you know, some of our rookies. I mentioned Chris Jones as well, starting to assert themselves. And so the Patriots now have a pass rush. So it stands to reason, if the Patriots are getting a pass rush now, which we've started to see again over the last few weeks, shouldn't that ostensibly make the pass defense better? I mean, think about it for a moment. Shouldn't that make them a little bit better? If you got guys that are in there on top of the quarterback and making his life uncomfortable and making him have to get rid of the ball earlier, why are passes still being completed? Why are teams still coming up with big gains? Why are teams converting on 3rd and 29, for God's sake? That was my other huge nitpick. 3rd and 29, they pick up 28.75 yards on a 3rd and 29 in the game. And then they go for it on 4th and less than 1 and obviously get the first down. I was blown away by that. There's no way, no how, that anybody at any time against a playoff-worthy team or defense that should ever pick up a first down on 3rd and 29. Did you not see the possibility for a screen pass coming? Apparently the Patriots did not because they had all of their backers in line and defensive backs deep, which allowed the running back on the play to pick up a head of steam and pick up, as I mentioned, 28.75 yards. That was a disgusting defensive play call. Now, you got all of my nitpicks now. I had 2 general nitpicks and 1 specific nitpick, and there you go. So, see, I knew that we could probably find something to nitpick in a 55-31 win. And yes, I know. Anytime you can beat a team like Pittsburgh, and I know Pittsburgh's not the Steelers of old, they're 2-6 now, but I think anytime you can beat a team that clearly still has some talent to it, like that, then overall it's pretty hard to complain with the overall effort. So what are your nitpicks? Have I touched them on them yet? Have either of our callers or any of our emailers touched on them yet? Want to hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com. 855-PATS-500. Toll-free telephone number. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook. Plus, the Miami Dolphins story, Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. Do you have a hazing story that you can share? And when should it be considered no dice? When is it over the line in your estimation? Even inside a football locker room, for those of you that have been inside football locker rooms. When is too much too much? I want to get into that in the playbook coming up.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located
located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team. From Foxborough all the way to Miami, Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place, Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back to the Playbook. It's hour number two for a Tuesday here on Patriots Playbook. I'm John Rook, Patriots.com Radio. Bye week for the Pats, 7-2 after 9 weeks. And now they get the week off. In fact, they have off almost an entire 2 weeks before playing again on Monday night, November the 18th. So 2 weeks from last night is when the Patriots will next step out on the football field. Believe me, it'll seem like a nuclear winter here in about another week. But we'll somehow try to get through it. Because I wanted to address actually one of the emails that I got here from Jeff in Florida, who says, John, stop blaming the NFL locker room culture for incognito. The little peak we have seen is far worse than the edgy vulgarity and competitiveness sometimes seen. The voice message is actually criminal. Also, blaming the victim is beyond the pale. Ask Eric if he knows the origin of that idiom without looking it up. I'll try to remember that tomorrow there, Jeff. And he goes, my nitpick is that my favorite radio show is not talking about my favorite team. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff, let me explain something to you. We got a long way to go, fella, for the next 2 weeks. We got a long way to go. And any time that there is a story of national interest, maybe even international interest, that could affect indirectly or even directly your New England Patriots, guess what? We talk about it in the playbook. We do. We do. It's not exactly some of the fun stuff in between as you might hear in the show open, but we're going to talk about it because invariably, somehow it affects the Patriots. As this story affected the Patriots or something similar to it in the organization's ability to tune out distraction when they had it over the summer in a negative sense with Hernandez and in a positive sense with Tebow. And I'm telling you, I don't think Miami overcomes this. I think the Dolphins are toasted. Now, maybe they'll rise somehow like a phoenix through the ashes, through the adversity that this whole Richie Incognito story, you know, has brought upon them. But when you got a quarterback who's already beat to a pulp by an offensive line that is not good to begin with, and now you're losing Incognito for at least the foreseeable future and probably for the rest of the season, you know, I can't imagine Ryan Tannehill's really looking forward too much to the, you know, last seven games of his season. I mean, he won't tell you that, but I mean, really, put yourself in his shoes for a moment. When you know you're going to get hit 8 or 9 times a game, and you know you're going to get sacked 4 or 5 times a game, if you're lucky, it's only 4 or 5, and you're going to get beat up. You're going to look forward to that? Every time you go to work, you're going to look forward to that? No. 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 Do you look forward to getting beat up by your boss at work? No, you don't look forward to that. So all I'm saying is that, you know, the situation is going to, I don't know how the Dolphins climb out of this. It looks to be sort of insurmountable, especially when the coach comes out and he talks about how he's going to take the blame for it all. And the latest is that the NFLPA, the Players Association, says it's going to monitor what they hope will be a fair investigation for all involved in this case. The league is investigating the relationship between Martin and Incognito and the team. The union has said it's going to hold teams accountable for safety and professionalism in the workplace, which is, of course, that's the union thing to say. That's the right thing to say. It's the very PC thing to say. But what I sort of find, you know, really disingenuous is when Joe Philbin, the head coach, says, as the head coach of Miami Dolphins, I'm in charge of the workplace atmosphere. Every decision I've made, everything we've done at this facility was done with one thing in mind, and that's to help our players and our organization to reach their full potential. Any type of conduct and behavior that detracts from that objective will not be tolerated. Well, I call BS, because this kind of atmosphere, this kind of stuff, as we all know, goes on in locker rooms all the time. Did Incognito again overstep the bounds? Well, of course he did. But hazing goes on everywhere. It just does. So how do you draw the line between the two? I mean, do you do away with all hazing altogether? I mean, is hazing completely outlawed now? A lot of people think it should be. And a lot of people think, you know what? You know, got to be in a locker room, okay? Got to be in a locker room. Got to spend some time on a team. You got to understand how bonding happens. And bonding happens when a bunch of different guys who come from, you know, different backgrounds and different, you know, walks of life all come together for a common reason, because they all go through the same things together. That's how teams come together. Doesn't mean they can't another way, but that's how it's been done for decades since the NFL came into being. And it's just sort of been passed down from team to team, generation to generation, sport to sport. So the NFL locker room culture is to blame partially. Richie Incognito, however, is to blame wholly for overstepping his bounds. Not a doubt in my mind. All right, and I still want your thoughts on the subject here in hour number two. Patriots did make some roster moves today, as I'm sure many of you are already aware, but for those that may be tuning in for the first time, Patriots announced the signing of Laquan Williams to their 53-man roster. They did release wide receiver Austin Colley today. They also signed rookie running back Sierre Wood to the practice squad. Colley, I guess, a little bit of a curious roster move today. There was, I believe, I understand, at least it was my understanding, that he was hurt toward the tail end of the game on Sunday, and maybe there was some kind of an injury settlement reached with him, and they just decided to let him go. But he wasn't signed until October the 3rd, so he was only here for a month. Obviously played 4 seasons with the Colts. Then he was signed by San Francisco as a free agent this summer, released by the 49ers after almost a month with the 49ers throughout training camp and the exhibition season, and then was, you know, looking for work until the Patriots picked him up the 1st of October. And Austin Colley was the reason, in case you were wondering, why Kimbrell Tompkins was not activated this last week. Tompkins was a healthy scratch for the first time in his career. And talk about how the mighty have fallen from catching that game-winning touchdown pass from Tom Brady in the last-second win over New Orleans to being inactive just, what, 2-3 weeks later? Kind of hard to believe, right? Well, Austin Colley was part of the reason for that, and now he's been released. So I don't know about you, but I do find that a little bit strange. If the name Sierre Wood is a little familiar, it probably should be. He was originally signed by the Texans out of Notre Dame this past spring, and he made their training camp roster, made the team, the 53-man roster, out of their training camp. Played in three games, and then he got released a couple of weeks ago, I think, by the Texans. So he actually had some time in regular season games for the Texans as well. Led Notre Dame in two of his three seasons, led Notre Dame in rushing. So he's got some capabilities, but the Patriots have him now on the practice squad. So that is at least the latest on the Patriots' roster moves today. Can also tell you that Field Yates from ESPN Boston, who's visited with us from time to time here in the playbook, he just put up on their blog that it looks like, you know, for those of you that are aware, Rob Ninkovich had to leave the game late on Sunday with what we thought was a foot injury. If the game had been closer, he said today that he would have been able to come back. So that's good news. And since he was available, today was the only day this week that the team practiced, because they have been given now an unprecedented 6 days off by Coach Belichick and the staff for, you know, their performance over the last couple of weeks. So it's a bye week. They're going to get a chance to have a nice long holiday, if you will, and chance to get away from the grind. And if they're going to go out and do something, they can go out and do something, but they will not have to report back until next Monday, when they will begin preparation for Carolina, and then they'll get back in their regular game week routine starting next Monday. So today was the only day this week, even though today is normally an off day, Tuesday is normally an off day for this team. They worked out today so they could have, you know, a nice long break during their bye week. And I think that's really kind of what you would hope that, you know, this team would get a chance to do, and that's what the coaching staff has allowed them to do, and so that's good news for the players. So they did work out today. Normally guys who are injured don't speak to the media, but Ninkovich did speak to the media today, and he told Field Yates, he said, in the game there, I had a little something there, just don't really want to get into the specifics of it, but it's something that with having a week off, I'm sure I'll feel even better next week and running around and doing whatever it is as far as a week of recovery. He's dancing around it a little bit, obviously, but it sounds like it's not too big a deal. He'll take the week off. Hopefully, it'll continue to get better. And then when he steps back out on the field next Monday, when they start preparations for the Panthers, he hopes to be back out there. And the Patriots don't have to submit a practice participation report or injury report or whatever until a week from this Thursday. Because, again, they don't play until Monday of the following week, on the 18th. So instead of Wednesday, it'll be Thursday of next week before we see our next practice report and participation injury report. So that's a lot of time. A lot of time before we'll even see one of those around here. But Ninkovich optimistic about the foot, so that's good, because when he came out of the game later, it's kind of like, uh-oh, here comes another injury, you know, to a member of the defense that, you know, could end up being brutal. Could end up being brutal. And apparently it's not going to be as bad as at least we thought. The latest that I have, in case you were wondering on why Austin Colley was released, there are a couple of different sources that are reporting that he left the Steelers game after a knee injury, but no one really knows how severe the knee injury was. Of course, you know, he had had the concussion issues that pretty much had, pardon the pun, knocked him out of the game after, you know, having such great success with the Colts. Up and through, what, 2009, 2010, that time frame. But at any rate, three passes, 34 yards, appeared in four games for the team. Apparently suffered some kind of a knee injury late in the game on Sunday, did not return to the game, and then was cut by the team today, according to several league sources, and the Patriots also announcing that officially just a short while ago. So that's different. So I don't think you'll see Kimbrel Tompkins, perhaps, as a healthy scratch anymore and not making the active roster, because somewhat ironically, it was Colley who took his place on the active roster for the game this past week against Pittsburgh. Now that situation kind of reverses itself somewhat. All right, let's get to some other emails and some other news that we have here for you. Again, phone lines are open, 855-PATS-500, toll-free, 855-PATS-500, aceticket.line, 508-298-0398. locally. That's the best way to get a hold of us here on the program. If you're anywhere, certainly within earshot in New England of us here, the 855 number is toll free. So anywhere you're listening to us across the globe, that's the number to pick up and call. The nitpicks are still kind of obvious, I thought. I really kind of thought we sort of, in the opening hour of the program, touched on some of the basic ones. I gave you mine, two general, one specific. If you've still got them coming, there's still plenty of time to get them off your chest. Like, for instance, what Michael tells me on Facebook today. He says, third down and long defense still needs to step up and make a play. No question, Michael. That's exactly what I said, and that was my one specific nitpick from Sunday. The third and 29 was ridiculous. That should never happen. A pro-caliber defense should never, ever allow that. It was a poor play call defensively. He says also knocking on the door of the end zone and they can't get it in. Come on. They need a better push. That's another good one as well. Early in the game, they're up close and they're trying to run an off tackle play. I'm like, you know, they had the ball inside the one. Sneak it, Tom. Has there been anybody better in short yardage situations? You know this, Big Al. Sneak it. I don't know. Add this to the offensive line issues of the season. The offensive line needs to work better as a unit. All right, some pretty good nitpicks today, Michael. What are yours? What are yours? If you've got them, let's hear them. Let's go to the email inbox at webradio@patriots.com. Chad from Douglasville, Georgia says, I'd like to hear your input about who you think has the most potential with this team between Logan Ryan and Kyle Arrington. I'm biased on this subject due to the fact I've seen Arrington do more harm than good for this team, referring to last season and some this season. Seems like he gets beat a lot. The one occasion that stands out to me most is last season against the 49ers, where he had a horrible game and, in my opinion, lost the game for us. If you remember, it was after Tom Terrific had one of his best comeback performances I've seen. I'm not sure who exactly the wide receiver was that Kyle was covering, but it was the very first play following Tom's comeback. He just gave up on the coverage. He got beat for a touchdown. I don't know why he was re-signed and was paid so much because, frankly, he's just not that good. I believe that Logan Ryan has way more potential to help this team than Kyle Arrington. He says, P.S., haven't they benched Arrington for Ryan on multiple occasions this year? Well, they have chosen Logan Ryan in particular in second half situations, and I'm not sure if it's because they want the rookie to continue to get acclimated and maybe make sure that he's, you know, caught up to the speed of the game. So that's why we haven't seen a lot of Logan Ryan in the first halves of games thus far in the first 9 weeks of the year. That might have something to do with it. I can't necessarily argue with the fact that, you know, I understand why you're upset with Arrington and you don't think he's very good. All I can tell you is that the proof is in the performance. Early in the year, he was pretty solid. You know, had a couple of picks early and seemed to be in a perfect role as the nickel back for this team. You know, in their sub coverage, but you know, in base, he's exposed. When he gets in one-on-one situations, he's exposed by not just the great receivers, but even by the normal everyday receivers. Now, you have to understand something, Chad. While I think, to answer your question, Logan Ryan, at least at this juncture, right now, week 9, week 10, as we're getting into, the Patriots have the week off. At this stage, I would say potentially, it appears that you are correct, that Logan Ryan has more long-term potential for this team than Kyle Arrington. But I would also tell you that, as you very well know, this is all about role-playing and how players fit into roles on teams no matter where they are. And so if Kyle Arrington has found his niche as a nickelback, that's probably where he should stay. Logan Ryan, I don't think they have quite enough confidence in yet because he's still learning the game at this level. Now, that doesn't mean he won't. That doesn't mean he can't. But yes, there have been some occasions where when he's been in there, he's done quite well for himself. Had a chance to talk to him about 3 weeks ago after the game, and he is a young man that is full of swagger. And I don't necessarily mean that in a cocky way. He just has tremendous confidence in his abilities. I I think that there's, you'll continue to see more of what you're describing, Chad, if play continues like it is. But that doesn't mean that they're going to dump on Arrington, because he might be asked to perform in situations where he's not entirely comfortable or even good. But he's going to step up and do what he can to help the team, because that's what he's being asked to do. And he, and because of the whole next man up routine here, because of some of the injuries they've had, and certainly Aqib Talib has been a big part of that, he's had to come in and play in some instances where he wouldn't normally be expected to perform. I hope that makes some sense to you, but at least that's my point of view on it. All right, GB says, Greg says, John, nitpick, the early killer instinct. I don't like how the Pats softened up and for that brief moment let Pittsburgh back into it. Let's not forget that this was 27-24 at the end of the third. Let's also not forget it was 24-24 in the third after leading 24-10 at the half. Okay, that's definitely letting somebody back into it. So, yes, softened up, let the Steelers back in it. Uh-huh. I don't like that either. Greg says, granted, they exploded and made it a laugher in the end, but this is a game where they should have jumped out and never let the Steelers whiff a chance at winning. Killer instinct, that's right. And that's something that definitely is the next step in terms of the development overall of this team. You got to be able to step on the jugular when you have a team down. They didn't do it when they were up 24-10 at halftime. So I allude to that. I would allow that I think the Steelers were the ones that made the adjustments better than the Patriots did at halftime. Patriots have a, okay, status quo mentality, while the Steelers have a, all right, here's what we need to change to get back in this mentality. And guess which mentality won? You need to change, and you need to anticipate the opponent changing as well. And I just don't think the Patriots have done that quite well enough this year. Now, that's a nitty nitpick if there ever was one. But I do think that there is some accuracy to it. When the Patriots have a lead at halftime, the other teams outcoach them, for lack of a better phrase, and the other teams out-execute them. And the other teams crawl back in. Now, the Patriots end up winning the game. I get that. It probably should never have gotten to that point. Hazing, he says, Gregory, too much is too much when a person feels unsafe. If a guy is called fat in a locker room and calls his accuser ugly, and everyone laughs, no harm, no foul, it is when a player is made to feel that he is unsafe in some way and or has no recourse that there's an issue. In this case, the player felt he had no option but to walk out and not come back. As a leader of an organization, it's the coach's responsibility to understand the interactions his players are having with one another and resolve these conflicts proactively. In any organization, things get out of hand from time to time and certain personalities clash. Instances like the one in Miami are caused by one thing, a complete lack of culture management by the coaching staff. Could not agree more. In other words, the coaches did not explain in either their actions or their words that there are mechanisms in place to deal with issues, as you put it, inside the family. They did not create the framework and things broke down. The coach should have a team meeting, a meeting with his staff, and a meeting with his captains, all to address the way that players with on the field, off the field, locker room, and other issues are to be addressed. This also could simply be a weak coach who's scared of his players and looking for approval. I don't think the Pats coach has that same desire. This is not a popularity contest. I think you nailed it right on the head, Greg. That's a very good email. Probably said it a heck of a lot better than I did as well. But it's a very succinct, well-written email, and I think you're exactly right. It's a complete lack of culture management that starts with the staff and trickles down. The players pick up on how the coaches feel about certain things. And let me say this. Joe Philbin has an offensive line background in his career. So you can maybe now get a little bit of an understanding why sometimes if something's going on with the guys on the offensive line, he kind of tends to think, oh, it's just guys being guys. And he probably blew it off and didn't pay attention to it. Why? Because he's used to it. Because the culture was already there and already in existence. He didn't realize how bad it had gotten. Doesn't matter where you've been. Every journey is different. Every team is different. And no matter how it was done 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, even in my instance, every case is different and needs to be treated differently. It's the only way that you rise above it. Do I think that there is a place for some tradition and some, shall we say, minor hazing? Yeah, I think, you know, the whole, you know, buying dinner, carrying someone's pads, you know, haircut shaving, and even that probably is borderline. But I think that's all in good fun. And I think it makes the rookies feel like they're a part of the team. And it allows the veterans, yeah, the Wookiees too. And it allows the veterans to interact with them on a more social basis. And allows them to, you know, do unto others, so to speak, because they had it done unto them. And it's all done in good fun. A lot of times it's even done for charity. So, you know, I don't think that stuff is out of hand. And I think that's the kind of thing that's sort of looked upon as a good instance to build, you know, some familiarity and some camaraderie within a team. And I think that's why this coaching staff and most coaching staffs allow that kind of thing to go on and to continue. But when you ignore it and you say boys will be boys and you turn and you go take care of your business and this kind of stuff continues to go when you have a bad apple in there and, you know, the Dolphins should have known that Incognito's not a good guy. They should have known. I realize that it's a different staff than the one that brought him in, but they still should have known. They know. They know what guys are. They know who they are. Reputations do precede themselves. They just turned a blind eye to it and didn't want to deal with it and thought that, oh, you know what, it'll be fine. We'll win some games and everything will be okay.
Let me play devil's advocate.
Okay.
If that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Did Aaron Hernandez's reputation precede itself?
Probably should have.
Just curious because that
no,
it just
I think
struck
it's
in my brain.
No, that's a legitimate question, and we did bring in that analogy in the opening hour of the program today. Yeah, his reputation should have. Well, first of all, I think we all know it's been fairly well documented, not only on this program but in media, so you can certainly search it and go find it. There's a reason that Aaron Hernandez slipped to the fourth round. Because of his reputation of being, a kind of a gangster at Florida.
So in a lesser sense, you know, obviously what Incognito did is on a lesser scale than what Hernandez is.
Oh, you can't compare the two.
You know, apples and oranges.
It is apples and oranges.
So,
but Incognito did threaten Martin's life if you take the words he uttered literally.
Yeah, verbatim, absolutely. So looking at the two of them, you could say, I think you could make an educated statement in saying that the Dolphins, maybe even that preceding regime, took a chance on Incognito,
mm-hmm.
a lesser one,
mm-hmm.
than the Patriots did with Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And that gamble, just like the Hernandez one, you know, failed them. They lost. And certainly, you know, and I know that Incognito is not playing one of these glamour positions like quarterback or wide receiver or tight end or running back. But you could at least say the Patriots got some talent on the field before Hernandez failed them. I don't think Incognito strikes me as a guy that's like a perennial Pro Bowler. I think he made the Pro Bowl once. I don't think he was a terrible player, but I don't think he was a guy that, you know, the Dolphins just had to have, so to speak.
No, he wasn't a guy that he had to have. But, I mean, you know, considering they knew that they were going to be thin depth-wise anyway to begin with, he wasn't a guy that they were certainly going to turn away from. I mean, there's just no way. They're going to turn away from him at all. Robin in Alaska says, a bully is a coward. Anyone thinking Incognito is a man you'd go to war with is going into a battle with a man that will run. Maybe. But I don't think that his teammates thought that, Robin. Something horrible is happening right now with the blasting of Martin. It's the same type of questioning of a victim's personality in rape cases. Why didn't they fight? Why didn't they do this or that? What type of person are they? Doesn't matter. Incognito is the guilty party here. The Finns management for not seeing the situation is also at fault. Martin for speaking out is not. People that stand up, make known passively or otherwise, that these things are happening takes more strength than can be measured in the weight room. Knowing the difference between hazing and good-natured ribbing is that one thing includes you and the other is an attack against you, physically, mentally, and or emotionally. An attack is an attack. Contrary to the childhood mantra, words are just as powerful as sticks and stones. As to hazing as tradition, oftentimes you can hear the word tradition being used to mask or justify wrongdoing. That is not political correctness to think hazing is the polar opposite to the concept of a team. Hazing is contrary to people being equal and working together to win. Hazing flies in the face of believing the next man up can do his part to help. Hazing is a clique system mindset. One group above another. Hazing has no place in society on any level. Hazing is barbaric. Well, Robin, the only question that I would have, and thank you for your email. The only question that I would have for you is have you ever been on a team? Have you ever been in a locker room? Have you ever come after someone who has been there before you, whether through age or through their good fortune, that they were just in a position to be in a position before you were? And in that case, if you were, I would argue that you probably weren't accepted as an equal until the people who came before you saw that you had paid some dues somewhere. Now, you may call hazing barbaric. Hazing really, what the Patriots do here really isn't hazing, even though I guess by the literal definition of the word, it is. It's ribbing. It's good natured. It's team building. It's camaraderie. It's like it is tradition. You know, we ask all of our newcomers to do this. Why? Because, well, decades of players have done it before you. And if you're going to be a part of this team and you want to get along and you want to, you know, fall in line, then you should be willing to do it too. So I would ask, Robin, have you never been in that situation yourself? Because to me, you know, and again, I appreciate your perspective and it's not wrong. Your perspective is not wrong at all. Far from it. But I would say I don't think you're looking at it from a both sides of the coin perspective. And that's why I've kind of entered into the discussion today, because I've been in locker rooms myself, and I've seen locker rooms that gotten out of hand, and there's always been somebody basically step in and say, all right, dude, that's enough. You know, all right, hey, that's funny. Ha, 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 that's enough. You know, I've had to do that once or twice myself. I mean, I never performed myself on a football field or a basketball court, or, you know, I was never a professional caliber athlete. But I went through, shall we say, ritualistic procedures when I pledged a fraternity my freshman year in college. And one of the, shall we say, team building, wink, wink, one of the team building things that we went through, as I was a fraternity, rushy pledge, if you will, was basically, without clothes and simply, immersing myself in a trash can barrel full of ice cold water. I did that. It wasn't pleasant, but you did it because your pledge brothers get up and do it, and it's silly and it's stupid, and everybody's yelling and screaming and laughing and having a good time, right? Well, except for the one, you know, idiot who's standing in there just to scare you, just to play mind games with you, hanging on to a cattle prod. Now, if you don't know what a cattle prod is, for those that may not be anywhere near cattle, cows, these are the electrical shock wands, if you will, that are used by cattle ranchers to move their cattle through their stalls, into feeding grounds and into cages that allow basically cattle to be branded, to be marked or tagged or otherwise ID'd, to move them along, so to speak. Because sometimes, as you know, big beasts like cows can be rather slow and cumbersome, and they don't move when you say, move! So you basically use the little electrical shock to tap them on the rear end, and sends a mild shock, and they move. It's not cruel and unusual punishment. Especially for the animal, because, you know, that's how you do things. But in this particular instance, the active, if you will, the pledge, not the pledge brother, but the active member of the fraternity, is standing there, and he's got this, you know, wand hooked up to a car battery. So that's kind of, you know, a little bit intimidating to begin with. And as you come out of that immersed bucket of water, he takes, you know, the guy brings that wand up to your face, or in my case, the rear end, and turns it on, and you hear the buzz. And so that's supposed to kind of make you jump through your skin. Now, I would say that that's a little bit over the top. But in my particular instance, my fraternity brother, and I use that term loosely, slipped, and he gave me the charge of my life.
It was an electrifying experience.
It was an electrifying, hair-raising experience. Yes, it was. That hurt like I can't even explain. It also stunned me that he would do something like that. So I turned around and yelled at the top of my lungs. I told him that if he didn't get the bleep out of here, that was personally going to pound his face into the ground. Now, first of all, this guy was, you know, shorter than me, but he's, you know, stocky and a good dude. I later became friends, but he made a big mistake because, as you know, things get out of hand, just like they do in locker rooms. And there was alcohol, and there was, you know, yelling and screaming and, you know, all kinds of things going on, and it just got out of hand. And he slipped, and he made a mistake. And I forgave him for it. But I was ready right then and there to beat the you-know-what out of the guy. Now, he might have ended up beating the you-know-what out of me in return because I was, you know, a skinny dude in college, believe me. I was so skinny, you turn me sideways, I'd disappear. But I didn't care. And so I kind of thought that, okay, that was over the top, and I didn't think that it served any purpose at all. And, of course, now as I reflect on it some 30-plus years later, you know, I understand they were trying to get us and my pledge brothers together as a class to pull together. They wanted to see who would step up and defend me. Well, as I recall, everybody was in the same scared state as I was, so there wasn't a whole lot of defending going on, but I defended myself. I would argue that certainly that type of hazing has no place in society at any level, and that it was bordering on barbaric, just as Robin in Alaska pointed out, you know, in the email. But I didn't feel like it was detrimental to my upbringing or to my being. You know, frankly, it kind of gave me some perspective. It led me to being actually, you know, having a different attitude about a lot of things in life. Certainly coming to, you know, relationship with my fraternity brothers at the time. But it was something that things happen. And while I never did it myself, that was the last time, because of the slip up on me, that was the last time, at least to my knowledge, that our particular fraternity did something like that. Now, it may have happened again in later years, but certainly during my next 3 years as a student, and as an active in that fraternity, I never saw that particular brand of hazing go again. Now, we always did the dunking in the ice water, but there was never a cattle prod involved ever again, ever. That changed. Sometimes it takes a mistake to change the culture. Maybe that will happen in Miami's instance. I don't know. G4 in Georgia says, John, my nitpick of the day is the O-line. Tom is taking way too many hits and sacks. 6 hits just last week alone. Looks like we all know he's a tough guy, but the wear and tear of a 16-game season on a 36-year-old is tough enough without 6 to 10 hits per game. They need to step up and protect their leader. That was my number one nitpick today, too, G4. Absolutely. You are spot on. 6 hits in last week. He's been hit way too many times. Says, I also agree with you about crossing the line between good-natured ribbing and outright harassment. I think it's something that trickles all the way down to high school and middle school football programs. I've seen high school coaches turn a blind eye when a star player decides to harass one of the weaker players on the team. If you want to talk about reform, let's not limit it to just the professional level. Kids learn this behavior is acceptable all the way back to middle school. Very true. Very, very true, G4. Very true. It has to take place at the lower levels, so it doesn't permeate us and become accepted once guys do matriculate, shall we say, into the professional ranks. John in South Carolina says, John, hazing is one thing, but this is not hazing. Even ex-football players, whoever they were from WEEI, were saying the veterans were extorting money and then abusing their rookies. Yep, that was part of it, too, in Miami. Absolutely. This is not hazing. When you haze people, the goal is supposed to make a cohesive unit, as we did in the military. See, that's a good point, John. The end result is to make the team stronger by strengthening the bond between the members of the team. Another good point, John, and that's what we tried to do in the fraternity, and it got out of hand. This is not what Miami was doing, and since the leaders of the Miami team were not stepping in, they might have been part of it. When we hazed people, we as the leaders made sure it did not go too far or get out of hand. So the question is, where is the leadership on the team? How did they let this happen? Why didn't they help the rookie stand up? Great questions all, John. And I'm glad you brought the military perspective into it, because I hadn't had a chance yet to bring that up or touch on it, but you're 110% correct. Nowhere is actual hazing more prevalent than in the military. It's a part of signing up. They need to make you tougher. Why do they need to make you tougher? They need to make you ready for, you know, to react, because you never know when you might be in a life-threatening situation. The bond must never be broken. And though they're just trying to strengthen that bond by some of the things that they do in the military to get you ready. I know this because my own son went through Navy boot camp. Some of the stories he's, you know, told me. And I just kind of laughed and I said, sounds like fraternity pranks to me. But nevertheless, it's still hazing. Eric says, my nitpick, Kyle Arrington. I know Tlaib was out, but every time I see him cover on the outside, he's being toasted. Reminds me of the past few years when our corners couldn't cover anything. He's in the right spot, but can't get his head around to find the ball. Looking forward to seeing Logan Ryan's progression. That's two who've picked on Kyle Arrington today, and also looking forward to Logan Ryan seeing more time in there. It's hard to argue. Hard to argue against Eric, but again, I would say, as I mentioned earlier, you know, Kyle Arrington is in there because he's a veteran player. He's got a little more experience overall, and I think that he's being asked to do some things that he's just not particularly adept at. And that maybe, hopefully, now Logan Ryan's progression will continue and keep this sort of thing from happening again. Garland says, sorry, but hazing at a professional level should not be tolerated. Contracts should have clauses where players can be released without pay if the type of hazing just recently done happens. Incognito should be expelled from the NFL and also be prosecuted for his behaviors. The NFL cannot allow this type of behavior. I would actually say, Garland, that, you know, on the surface, you are correct. No one's making excuses here. But unless you've been in a locker room yourself, then you don't know. And I think it's fair to say that. You don't know what is required of some of these guys. He also says, so I missed the game, but it sounded like the reason the defense gave up so many points was because Arrington and the safeties could not protect the pass very well. Curious how the young linebackers looked, like Fletcher and Collins. How about Soap? He's not as big as Vince, but he brings some new talents that Vince did not have, such as speed. Well, as mentioned, Soap Waga did have a pretty solid debut. I think he was in on like 25 snaps. Looking forward to see him in there more, and I think he will be as the season continues to progress. Fletcher and Collins. Fletcher had a hell of a game. Nice quarterback sack. Collins we saw in coverage. I saw Dante Hightower even in coverage on a couple of occasions, and he certainly looked a heck of a lot better than what we had seen earlier this year. So it seems like there was some progression there. But I didn't think that the secondary overall had a great game, because while there was a pass rush, yeah, some of those guys were getting burnt in the secondary. So, Warren says, can we just cancel Rook and the Queen show and have 4 hours of PFW? Did you see this one, Kevin?
I saw that one.
Wow. Why is that, Warren? What's the problem? And by the way, you know, Rook and the Queen, really? Come on. Really? Well, if you want, you know, guys that, you know, have a hard time speaking over each other, then that's fine. You want to talk about some football issues, then you'll be here. That's what I would argue. Glenn says, John, love the show. The honesty you and Eric bring, keep it up. See? See there, Warren?
Is yin and yang right in those two.
I know. That's unbelievable. Well, if you're not a big fan, Warren, let me suggest do some work rather than listen on your computer. Or go to bed since you're over in the UK. Hey, John, love the show. The honesty you and Eric bring, keep it up. My nitpick for today, why did Devin McCourty field the punt late in the fourth quarter near the five-yard line with 4 to 5 minutes to go? I believe E even caught the ball with his back to the Steelers. Why not let it go and bounce out of the end zone, therefore setting up the Patriots at the 20 instead of at the 5 or the 8-yard line? He's usually pretty smart on special teams. That's a great nitpick. I remember that play too, Glenn. Thanks for bringing it up. And I'm like, why is he fielding that? And I think it was because nobody was back there. And I think your instinct is to be back there without realizing what the situation might be. But wait a second. Hold on. Hold on a second now. Kevin, help me remember here. Was that on a punt or was that on a kickoff? I think that was a kickoff.
McCourty?
Yeah.
Was a kickoff.
That's right. So
yeah,
that's why.
But the issue with me is he could have just ran away from that thing.
He should,
let
yeah.
it bounce into the end zone. He caught it at the one.
But he was afraid, though. He had to run back there because if the ball doesn't make the end zone, it's a live
ball.
Well,
it's one of those things where you run back and you watch it go over your head and out of the end zone. And if it, for some reason, takes the bounce of God and bounces up, you're right there to
then,
pick it up.
Well, that's why I'm saying. So that's why he was back there anyway, Glenn, to answer your nitpick. It wasn't a punt. It was on a kickoff, and the Patriots had their entire kick receiving team within 20 yards of the line of scrimmage.
God, was it a bonehead play to take a knee at the 7?
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, that's...
I was ready to kill somebody.
That was just because I think he forgot where he was in the situation.
And there's not enough attention drawn to that because, if you recall, next play, LeGarrette run... LeGarrette Blount, 12-yard run.
Right.
Next play, Dobson caught that 80-yard bomb for a touchdown.
Right.
Game, set, match.
Yeah,
if the Patriots go 3 and out right there and have to punt from their own end zone, only up 10 with 4 minutes left,
it's a ball game. Yeah, it's a ball game.
But that was a colossal mistake.
So I think it's a legitimate nitpick, but I would also argue that, you know, because it wasn't a punt, which he clearly would have let go, then he felt like he had to be back there in case the ball took a crazy bounce. Yeah, the real nitpick you should have is with him downing the ball, going down on a knee or sliding down or whatever it was.
I thought
that he
I
did.
Was hallucinating.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of hard to, it was kind of hard to see, you know, kind of hard to understand, right? All right. Robin in Alaska emails back. He says, I have played sports all through my childhood and through high school. I've also attended a military school during my high school years. I believe I've been blessed with always having good leaders ahead of me. Even said, I've seen hazing, and at no time did I stand for it, nor did any superior I have been under. I have been made an example of, positively, in those circumstances, of knowing where that line is and enforcing it. Bonding is different than hazing. Bonding can be a situation where all of us are going to be stupid and shave our heads. Or all of us are going to the lake and jumping in even though it's November.
Or grow mustaches in November, like a lot of us do for men's health and awareness and all that stuff.
Or grow beards and win a World Series.
There you go.
You know, like the Red Sox did, right?
Bonding. By the way, I'm still waiting for mine to come in here. I've been working on it all week, and it's still struggling.
Still not working? Bonding is coming together. Well, you're just, Kev, you're just follically challenged all over the place.
Yeah, but usually I can grow it on my, I shaved, the rule is, John, so I signed up for the, quote, Movember team here with the Revs.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a very nice fundraiser to raise money for men's health and awareness and cancer, prostate cancer, testicular cancer, all that good stuff that you and I have to look forward to.
Mm.
So the rule is, John, and I never knew this. I thought I could just kind of trim my goatee that I had and keep the mustache, but you
had to shave it
completely clean.
Right.
So
and
I
then
started
grow it back.
Completely clean, took a picture of myself, did the whole 9 yards, and it's coming in, but it's very slow.
If I'd known that, I would have joined in.
You can still join in.
Can you?
I can send you the link if you want.
Send
you
me the
join
link?
The team.
Maybe I should do that.
You and I will both look like 70s porn stars walking around.
Well, you know, I grow white, you know, on my face because of my age, but my beard looks like a calico cat. I got orange, I got black, I got gray.
You're
I got
exactly
white.
The same as me. I think it's like my Irish heritage. I get a lot of orange and a lot of like dark brown and a little bit of blonde. I get like all three different
weird
colors in my facial hair.
Weird.
I wish I could just shave off some of it and put it on my head.
Kind of funny how your nationality comes out, your background comes out in your beard.
Your beard, exactly.
It's true though. Robin goes on by saying, bonding is coming together. It's inclusive. It can be dumb, but there is trust and safety there. It's still voluntary, but the hope is all will involve themselves in this absurdness. Trust is built here. That's a very good point and a great way to put it, Robin. Hazing is just truly an attack on another person, masked as group building as bonding. Perhaps the issue here between me, some listeners, and the show could be just one of vocabulary. We all listening today have similar, if not exact, opinions on when this thing goes wrong. So maybe the argument is just against the term. Yeah, that's good. That's absolutely good. I think I appreciate that, Robin. And that's actually a pretty good way to put it. Hazing is probably an incorrect way to term the team building aspects of bonding, if you will, of some of the absurdness, as you put it, that go on between teams in order to build strength and camaraderie and all that kind of good stuff between teams. Hazing is just nothing more than an attack on someone for the sake of being mean. That's a good way to put it. Warren just emailed back. Now I know why I don't listen to your show. Obviously, you don't get a joke. I you're right, Warren. That one flew right out of my head. Where was the joke in the previous email? I missed it, you know? I didn't see any joke in those words. Sorry. You know, if you're trying to be, you know, sarcastic or whatever, use the sarcasm font next time in your computer. You don't get the joke either, do you, Warren? Oh, goodness. Just having some fun with you, bloke. All right, let's see. What else do we have? Oh, my goodness.
You got a phone call.
I
very important.
My apologies, Kat. My apologies.
Okay.
You know, I didn't even realize you were there because I was reading through these emails. So thank you very much for the phone call. It's Kat in Chicago. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing better. I was real sick for a couple weeks, so.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm glad that you're doing better then.
Yeah, I'm back on my feet, so.
Good. Well, that's encouraging. I'm glad to hear that you're on the mend. What's on your mind today?
I wanted to say I agree completely with Robin from Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a difference. The problem is that in the NFL especially, there has been a loss of distinction between the idea of hazing and the idea of a rite of passage. Hazing in itself is intrinsically a humiliating experience. That's the whole point of it, is that it's degrading. Whereas a rite of passage can be something that, yes, the idea is that you're going from a lesser status to a better status, but it doesn't have to include that type of bullying or harassment that a hazing ritual does.
Sure.
And I think, you know, one of the things that makes me even more upset about it is I think, obviously, this whole thing with Incognito has gone totally above and beyond, and everybody's completely incensed about his use, his language, and the racial slurs and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the idea that this $30,000 check and the rookie's going broke because they can't cover the veterans' expenses and all this, that's just as dangerous. And a lot of these guys aren't going to make it in the NFL. There are a lot of the rookies, even after you make it onto the 53-man roster, as we've seen with a lot of people that New England has drafted. Look at some of the corners that we've had. They make it 2, maybe 3 years in the league, and then they're done. And receivers, too. I mean, you can look at a lot of these guys. It's not like they're set for life. And there's a huge, huge, huge epidemic of NFL, ex-NFL players going broke. They have nothing. They can't. They don't know what to do with all of this. And the fact that veterans are abusing the younger players in any way, but especially monetarily, this should be the best time of those guys' lives, and they shouldn't have to be putting up with that. And I know the money thing. It seems like a minor thing, but I don't think it is. I think this is an opportunity for the NFL to turn around all of that bad press that they've had, especially recently with concussions and taking care of their players.
Yeah.
And I think that they could really gain a lot of traction. I hope they capitalize on this because there should be a culture change.
Well, I think that that's what everybody's hoping for, that there is a bit of a culture change here, because this is a perfect opportunity to take advantage of it, to get this story and this issue out in the open, and to show that there is a difference between bonding, if you will, and actual hazing, and you know, and how much control needs to be exercised in these particular instances within the organization, which is why I think Joe Philbin ultimately is going to end up being in trouble in Miami. I just, common sense has got to prevail. And my first inclination, Kat, when I heard this story and I read all the details and I saw some of the video and I heard about, the message that was left on Martin's phone, everything. My first impression was, oh my goodness. Now, why wouldn't somebody stand up and say something in that locker room? In other words, why didn't a teammate, why didn't somebody on that line in the trenches with either one of those guys stand up and say, look, this is over the top. Back off. Or go to Martin and say, look, you got a problem here. Go talk to somebody about this, okay? Or take care of it yourself and go deck the dude out on the practice field. And you
the
know what?
It's not that uncommon, though. I mean, being a psychology, major and having a master's in psychology, I can tell you that that's pretty common when someone in a position of authority, like Incognito was, is doing this type of thing. It's very hard. If it were peers, that would, but he was raised above the other guys in that locker room.
Well, that's also true.
A lot of weight.
That's a good point because he was on, believe it or not, the Dolphins Leadership Council.
Right.
And so being in a position of authority, which to me is ridiculous, and you've got to blame, I think, the players that also put him in that position of leadership in that locker room to begin with, because what the hell are they thinking? So that's why this whole, this whole unseemly affair just permeates through that entire locker room and that entire team and organization. And I'm just not sure that there's any strength there that can overcome this. Certainly not this year. I think they're going to have to clean house of a lot of people.
I would agree.
Because it's the only way they're going to fix things. It probably starts right at the top. And if this season goes in a downward spiral, then Philbin's got to go. And then probably Jeff Ireland's got to go too. Huh?
How is there any way it can't go in a downward spiral?
We're getting ready to find out because, Tannehill's already getting killed at quarterback. All right. He's already getting beat up beyond recognition, and Incognito is not going to be a part of that line. So it's only going to get worse from here on out. The only thing that I can surmise is that somehow some of these guys take it upon themselves to right the wrong and step up their game. And maybe you see, some improved play for at least a short amount of time until they just can't sustain it any longer. Mm-hmm. But there will definitely be some change somewhere. There has to be. There has to be. And it'll be up to the ownership and Stephen Ross and that entire organization, to make sure that that some change does happen.
Yep. I agree with you.
Or there will still be questions about it. There will still be questions and it will continue to haunt the Dolphins, just like the whole Hernandez thing could have haunted us here. And it didn't because there's strength at the top of the organization here.
Right.
So.
Yep, I agree with you.
Any nitpicks from Sunday, Kat?
My normal nitpick, which is that I don't think that we press enough. I don't think that either our linebackers or corners, whoever is, on receivers on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they bump enough.
I want
them to knock receivers off the route. Especially some of the guys that used to do it well, like Dennard, he didn't. There were some times in that game I didn't see him get any. He didn't even touch the guy.
Well, I would argue that I actually saw Denner do that a couple of times, but that's Arrington's biggest fault because he just plays soft. And I think they're so afraid of getting burnt, and I think they're so afraid of defensive holding coming because you can't touch the guy after a 5-yard cushion that they just back off altogether.
Right. You have to be right on that line, right across from that guy, and you have to put your arms out.
I agree. I agree.
We're not doing it.
But I also think, Kat, that that's being coached by the Patriots coaches.
I agree. Yeah, and I don't understand that.
Well, that's been one of my nitpicks for a very long time with this team. I think that, in the secondary defensively, they coach their defensive backs to play these receivers differently and not to necessarily jam them at the line. And I think it's largely because a lot of the rule changes that have come across in the NFL over the years. And I think they've tried to coach these guys differently. And what I'd like to see is a return to a little bit more of a physical style.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why we get beat a lot on those deep, especially deep routes, because the guys can't keep up.
Right.
Those receivers are too fast.
That's right.
If you don't hit them at the beginning,
that's right.
You're not gonna catch them.
I agree. Hey, good to hear from you, and I'm very, very happy you're feeling better.
Thank you. It's good to hear. Good to talk to you too.
Good. All right. Let's do it again soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. You got it. Kat in Chicago. Going to put a wrap on the playbook here for a Tuesday. Thanks for the cards and letters and the phone calls today, kid, on a subject that, I think is intriguing. It's a shame that we have to get into a bad situation before we bring up the topic of hazing, bullying, whatever. but it's certainly a topic that's worth talking about in all of our lives, and hopefully it will stay in the forefront to the point where we can actually do something about it. Tomorrow's program, we're going to issue mid-season grades, so I really want you to put your thinking caps on, and we're going to do grades on offensive line, offensive backs and receivers, quarterback, and then we're going to do grades on the defensive side as well, defensive line, linebackers, DBs, special teams, coaching. And we want to see if we can come up with an overall grade of where this 7-2 Patriot team should be. I'll have my pen out. We'll be scribbling some notes. We want your input. So be thinking about it between now and showtime tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time, right here in the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.